A recent study of 10,000 young people ages 16 to 25 was a global survey. 47% said that climate anxiety interfered with their daily life. And then this is the statistics that really stopped me in my tracks. 1 out of 4 don't want to have children of their own because of the climate crisis.
Welcome to Take Back Your Health with Dr. Amy Myers. Today's guest is a dear friend, Heather White. Heather White is an author, speaker, consultant, and expert in environmental health, green living, and eco-anxiety, the mental health impacts of the climate crisis. She is the founder of the nonprofit OneGreenThing.org. Heather's 2 decades of experience include serving as presidential campaign staffer to Al Gore, as the environmental counsel to the U.S. Senator, and as executive director of 3 national environmental nonprofits. She's been featured on Good Morning America, quoted in the New York Times, The Washington Post, Teen Vogue. She lives in Bozeman, Montana with her family. I am so excited to welcome Heather White. Hi, I'm Dr. Amy Myers, founder and CEO of AMMD. After spending more than a decade in my medical practice seeing what supplements worked or didn't work for my patients, it was difficult to find products that had all of the ingredients at the quality that I wanted. So I decided to create my own formulas based on my clinical experience. All of the products located on amymyersmd.com are personally formulated by me. They've been third-party tested and are free of the top allergens. They are what they say they are in the potency and composition, and they are in their most bioavailable forms for maximum effectiveness. I am committed to empowering you to take back your health. I've created a special offer to welcome listeners of my podcast on your first purchase of any of my products on amymyersmd.com. Simply enter promo code EMPOWER20, EMPOWER20 at checkout, and you'll receive a 20% discount on your first AMMD purchase. The promo code again is EMPOWER20 at amymyersmd.com. Well, welcome, Heather White. We go way back to, my gosh, your days at you working at EWG. I've interviewed you a few times, and we've even met in person in your where you're living now in Bozeman, Montana. So welcome to Take Back Your Health with Dr. Amy Myers.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's such a pleasure to be with you today.
So happy to have you. So you are really the go-to for all things, you know, regarding the environment. And so we're going to kind of talk today about, you know, the impact of our health on the environment and the environment on our health and, you know, vice versa and all things. So first, for the listeners, if you could kind of just give us a general background, you know, about you so they know more, a little more.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I've always been interested in the environment. And I think one of the things that you talk about a lot, Amy, is that, you know, protecting the environment is protecting your health, right? A lot of times we think the environment is somewhere that you, somewhere far away where you go on vacation, like Bozeman, Montana or Yellowstone National Park, but the environment is here and now. So I'm originally from East Tennessee. I studied environmental science in undergraduate school. I have a law degree. I worked on Al Gore's presidential campaign. I was always interested in environmental policy and law, but it was really having kids that brought me to the issue of environmental health. And also to this new issue that I've been researching is the impact of our environment on our mental health, which is called eco-anxiety.
So you and I met many years ago when you were working for the EWG or Environmental Working Group, which, you know, I've written about in all of my books, frankly, just kind of, you know, a place, a great resource. Can you tell us about your time there and kind of what EWG does?
Sure. I was executive director of Environmental Working Group. I actually worked there for 9 years out of my career. I worked there for 3 years and then came back for another tour of duty, as I like to call it. And EWG is an environmental health watchdog. They're all about the connection between health and the environment. They do everything from the food that you eat, from those personal care products you buy, the cleaners you buy. Just they have all kinds of wonderful resources, whether they're apps to tell you what chemicals are in the products you buy or how to get involved in different environmental campaigns.
So can you tell us, you know, one of the things that I write about in my books, and then we're going to jump into your books because you have an incredible book and a new one launching that I haven't seen yet. So we'll talk about those. Just, you know, I write about sort of looking at your personal care products and looking at your cleaning products. Can you tell us kind of some of the things to avoid, places to maybe go to check out your cleaning products, and frankly, why it's really important that we care about these things, both for our own health and for the environment, right?
Amy, that's such a good question. The average person puts 8 to 12 different personal care products on their body every day. I mean, male or female, whatever gender you ascribe to, you know, they're using everything from toothpaste to hand soap to moisturizer to mascara, you name it. And so what we put on our bodies is important. And it wasn't until recently. So in 1938 was when the first Cosmetics Act was passed. And that was because a woman used eyeliner that had a preservative in it. It was actually rat poison, and she went blind. Oh. She was a socialite. So in 1938, when this woman went blind for using an eyeliner, that's the only reason cosmetics were even included in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. And so it just last year, that act was updated. If you can believe it, it took that long for the act to be updated. So now cosmetics do have to be substantiated as safe before they go on the market. But until just last year, they were not required to do that. And so that's why a lot of times we just assume, because there's so many regulations and there's a lot of red tape, we're all really familiar with that. We assume that the government is taking care of us in many of these aspects, but that's not true. And that's why you do need to do Take Back Your Health, like you said. And you have to be really aware of what you buy. So things to think about, see the great tools that I use the EWG's Healthy Living app, which you can take to the grocery store, you can take to, you know, the personal care, wherever you buy your personal care products, and wherever you buy your cleaners, to try to figure out what chemicals to avoid. They actually grade those different products. There's also a wonderful certification called Made Safe that I use a lot. And I look at Made Safe to see, you know, what products are healthy and what are best buys for with respect to the environment too, not just our personal health, but the impact it has on the environment. And then there's also another wonderful tool Consumer Reports has. They have all kinds of studies out there, where it's always great to look at Consumer Reports. And then there's another app called Think Dirty, which is kind of fun, that's trying to encourage you to be clean when it comes to the personal care products you buy.
And so I know, you know, when I was researching for my books and through my interviews with you previously, that, you know, one of the things that the cosmetic industry particularly says is, well, it just has this tiny amount. And so it really doesn't matter. But I think it's really this accumulation. I don't know if it's a study from you or from others, but that, as you just mentioned, the number of products that people are using. So it's this cumulative effect. Can you kind of speak to that?
Well, yes. And you do such a great job of this in your book too, in your books, plural, Amy, about this whole idea of endocrine disruption, hormone disruptors. A lot of times we think, you know, in toxicology and things like that, the larger the dose, the bigger the harm. But that's not always true when it comes to sensitive systems like our hormones. And so our hormones can be disrupted by very small doses, can have a much bigger impact than a large dose per se. And so there are many hormone disruptors in our personal care products. For example, phthalates, which you write about, that can affect your thyroid and are also hormone disruptors, are often found in fragrance, for example. So that's one of the reasons you want to try to avoid that catch-all term of fragrance and really be mindful about what you're buying. So that's just one example. And then in combination, we're not sure what all of these chronic low-dose exposures do to us over time. And that's where there's concerns about cancer, hormone disruptions, the links to thyroid issues, as you write about so beautifully and so clearly. And so that's why it's really important to be mindful and intentional about what you buy, what you use to clean your home, what you put on your body, and what's absorbed by your skin.
And so speaking of cleaning your home, you know, my understanding, you know, through interviewing you and research is that a lot of the studies are, you know, that they're reliant on the home cleaners to do their own studies to prove that these things are actually toxic. It's not, you know, on the EPA to be doing these, but on the manufacturer themselves. Can you kind of speak to that when it comes to the home care, to the home cleaning products and things?
Yeah, I think there's an assumption that our cleaning products are kind of like medicines, you know, that 7 years before anything comes on the market. And that's just not how it works in the world of cleaners. A lot of the times cleaners have to, you know, voluntarily, obviously they don't want to get sued. So they do, you know, the companies do studies, but they're not at the quality that we would expect before they go on the market. So there really isn't a barrier for them going on to the market, except, you know, afterwards when we find that there's issues with asthma or trigger with allergies, or, you know, some kid doesn't have the right safety lid and they end up drinking this detergent or something like that. So the burden comes after the fact. You know, the burden was really on us to show that there's harm rather than a burden being on the company to show the product is safe. And in general, that's what how things have worked when it comes to our chemical regulation process. We have seen some big changes, you know, with the Toxic Substances Control Act being changed in just about 5 years ago. And then also just last year with the personal care products, there's also been important movement on disclosing ingredients and cleaners in particular, but cleaners are separately regulated than toxic chemicals in general, than in personal care products. So it's a very complicated web. And I think one of the things, and one of the reasons why your research is so important, Amy, is that people are expected to be their own little EPA, right? And so we do have to exercise agencies where we can and know that things aren't as safe as we assume that they are.
And so what do you recommend people cleaning their homes with? Is there something that you use in particular, something either homemade or over the counter, you know, a clean product that you like?
Great question. I use baking soda and vinegar. I know it sounds really simple, but that's what my grandparents used to use. And I use that a lot. Now, I just got over a round with COVID. So sometimes I am going to use a little bleach if I'm dealing with something like that, but not very often. You know, I really try to choose organic. I look for certifications. There's all kinds of great certifications out there. Whether I mentioned Made Safe, EWG Verified, there's all kinds of wonderful groups out there. There's also USD Organic. I always try to buy organic when I can. And that at least shows that there's been some affirmative duty that the company has taken on itself to show that the product is safe and not toxic. But those are things that I use. One of my best glass cleaners is taking a little bit of detergent and some vinegar and water and just mixing that up and using that to clean glass and clean the bathrooms, et cetera.
And do you have any thoughts on like industrial hydrogen peroxide, H2O, or even just alcohol? I know I got very into alcohol during the COVID days.
I would love to know your thoughts on that, because that's where I've just gone back and forth over the years. And this is the thing. This is when, you know, in just a minute, we're going to talk about eco-anxiety. This, when you start to learn all this stuff, like the laws aren't protecting you like they should, even though there's been some great improvements lately, you can't unlearn. Right. Once you know, you can't unlearn it. And then it's easy to get super stressed out. So tell me, Amy, what you've learned, because I would love that.
I mean, I use, just from my days of being exposed to toxic mold, one of the things that they use in remediation is just industrial strength hydrogen peroxide. So you do need to, you know, wear gloves and whatnot or dilute it down. And so we use, in my home, I sort of became to love the smell of alcohol after COVID. And then, you know, of course, the H2O2 are the kind of main things, along with vinegar and baking soda, as you mentioned. But we don't have any, I'm trying to think, we don't have any store-bought cleaners in my house. They're all Branch Basics. I'll give a plug for them. They're a company out of Austin. We do often use that as well. So those are sort of my typical cleaning. And then, you know, when it comes to body products, I use Dr. Bronner's soap on virtually everything. And I use that on my face until I started my own skincare line for, you know, facial cleanser and whatnot. And so Dr. Bronner's, and then in terms of makeup, it's either Beauty Counter or Well People. I don't know if you want to share your routine as well.
Yeah. That's so great. Well keep people, of course, based in Austin. So you've got strong ties there, I know. But
yes, they were acquired by e.l.f. several years ago, but luckily they have not changed the formulas. But yes,
Fantastic. The
original founders of Well People are from Austin and friends of mine.
So People's great. Beauty Counter. I use True Botanicals as well. And the Think Dirty app and the EWG Healthy Living app are great to take to the store with you if you just, you know, if you're at the, you know, Rite Aid or whatever, CVS, and just need something fast. That's great. But that's what I use too for my personal care products. And Dr. Bronner's is great. That Castile soap, it's amazing what you can use that for.
Amazing.
I have a lot of Dr. Bronner's in my house too. I also like Grove. They have concentrates now that you can use. So there's no plastic packaging. So I use some of the Grove products too. There's all kinds of new brands that are coming out, you know, every week. And that's what's so exciting. I think more and more people are connecting the dots between the environment, their personal health, and then the impact that we make as individuals and a community on the earth.
Right. So that's an excellent point. So I use, and their name is escaping me at the moment, but they are laundry sheets instead of laundry detergent. So the packaging is recyclable and it's a sheet that dissolves instead of the big plastic, laundry soap. So not only am I doing that because it's unscented and healthy for non-toxic for me, but I do it because of all the laundry bottles. So let's talk about that connection of not only, picking products to clean your body and your home that are healthy for you, but also the impact on the environment. Can you speak to that sort of global connection there?
Absolutely, Amy. That's such an important point because something as simple as shifting like how you buy laundry detergent is important. And I'll tell you that I live with teenagers, and that's why I wrote my books. First, One Green Thing, Discover Your Hidden Power to Help Save the Planet. And next, coming out April 9th, is 60 Days to a Greener Life. I wrote it because of my teenagers. So I'll just tell you, my teenagers will be like, oh, that's great. You know, Mom, I'm glad you're skipping the straw. I'm glad you don't have the plastic laundry detergent. You know, you deserve an award, right? You just solved the climate crisis. Eye roll, right? But the reality is when you're making different choices, like you just talked about, Amy, and I'm making different choices, like many of our listeners are, being more mindful about the impact on our health and our environment, we are creating really important market signals, and we're creating really important signals in our community. So our individual action to help protect the environment, to help protect our health, to help prevent the climate crisis, to help deal with the climate crisis does matter. But our individual action isn't about the math. And I think that's really interesting. This whole concept of an individual carbon footprint was actually created by oil and gas companies to try to kind of shift the burden onto us and not the people who manufactured all of this stuff that we have to deal with. Now, granted, it fuels our cars and powers our homes. We know that. But we also have alternatives that we need to shift to quickly. But the point is, your individual action really does matter. And making these choices each day, just like you were talking about, using the baking soda and vinegar, checking out your Dr. Bronner soap, making those changes can help you ease your anxiety about the big issues that are out there and also inspire other people to make a difference too.
So you already mentioned the eco-anxiety. Can you explain to us what that is and is this something you've termed? Is this something that was already termed out there?
Another great question, Amy. It's actually a new term that was defined by the American Psychological Association in 2021. And the term means a chronic fear of environmental doom. And I know that's pretty intense. The Oxford English Dictionary only defined it last year. But more and more people are really worried about our future when it comes to the extreme weather events that all of us are experiencing now and how that's caused by mostly our energy choices. And so young people especially are worried. And that's one of the reasons that compelled me. I was joking about my teenagers kind of rolling their eye when I skip the straw or have these sustainable habits. But I wrote the book because of their deep concerns about the future we're leaving them. And I've talked to some of my friends who are like, well, Heather, of course your kids have eco anxiety. They're worried about the future. They're worried about climate change because they're your kids. But to a person, when I ask my friends to talk to the young people they love, it's been a game-changing conversation for them. A recent study of 10,000 young people ages 16 to 25, it was a global survey, said that 47% said that climate anxiety interfered with their daily life. Almost half. And then this is the statistics that really stopped me in my tracks. 1 out of 4 don't want to have children of their own because of the climate crisis. Amy, that's not because a lifestyle choice or, they don't really want to be a parent. It is because they are so worried about the future that we are leaving them. They don't want to have kids. And I think that's a wake-up call for all of us who are baby boomers, Gen Xers, millennials. It's a wake-up call for all of us to really get involved. And so that's what inspired me to write my books and to also see and dive into the research and learn more about the impacts of this crisis on teen mental health, especially.
Wow. I had not heard that statistic. That is concerning. So what can a young person do? What can, we as a society do?
Such a great question, Amy. And that's something that, you know, keeps me up at night, right? And that's where I get the pushback on the straw or using the laundry sheets instead of the instead of the plastic bottle that I bought at the store. And the first thing I think you can do is really ask the young people you love how they feel about the future we're leaving them. Just be open to a conversation. And I think mostly you're going to hear a lot of concern, and let them know that they're not alone. Let them know that you are committed to taking action too. And then in my book and the nonprofit that I started after I left EWG, I worked at Yellowstone. If you recall, I ran the nonprofit partner to Yellowstone National Park. And now I've started my own nonprofit focused on eco-anxiety, climate anxiety, eco-grief, this whole idea of the intersection between mental health and environmental action. But what I have is I have an assessment. It's kind of like Myers-Briggs or Enneagram, where you can find out who are you in service. And you take this assessment, and then I match you to a daily practice of sustainability, what I call one green thing. And you do one green thing each day, whether, you know, a walk in the woods, whether it's calling your member of Congress, whether it's switching to a green detergent or a better personal care product, having a conversation with a young person. You do one thing each day, and that can help shift the culture for these big solutions that we need. But that question you ask really sticks with people, like, what can I do? How can I make a difference?
Is that, I mean, it's a start, but is it enough? You know, can each person do one green thing a day and it create a shift? You know, when we're talking about, you know, like, let's, you know, my understanding is, you know, much of the greenhouse emissions are actually coming from conventional farms. And so, you know, how does us selecting a laundry detergent that's good for us and good for the environment really affect something as massive as the cattle farming? And I'm not talking about grass-fed. You know, I'm a proponent. I was a vegetarian for 27 years. I am a proponent of eating meat, eating, you know, sustainably sourced fish, chicken, meat. So, but the conventional farmers, how can these shifts affect something as massive as that?
That is just a great question and so important. It's both and, right? So we need systemic change. We have to have stronger laws. We have to have them globally, right? Because not only you're talking about cattle farming here in the United States, but also what about just globally what's happening in India and China with their energy choices?
But South America with the rainforest getting cut down.
Exactly. And that land transitioning to agriculture. What we have to do, though, in order to have these big changes, they don't just happen, right? Like one of the person who wrote the intro to my first book is Erin Brockovich, and her book is called Superman's Not Coming. Like, you know, like no one's coming to save us. It is us. It is up to us. And those individual daily practices, you know, kind of like meditation, like running, like yoga, this one green thing each day can help shift the culture, because we have to have that culture shift in order for these big solutions to work, to have grass-fed beef, for animals to be raised humanely, for us to think about reducing food waste. It's one of the top five things you can do as an individual to limit your carbon emissions is to reduce food waste. Well, having community composting, you know, having these systemic policy solutions are really important, but we only get there if people take advantage of them. And we only get there if there's that culture shift, and that's what falls on us. That's where our individual patterns matter, is that you, Amy, telling people, you don't have to go completely vegan. You don't have to be a vegetarian, but, you know, explore plant-based options. Think about your meat and how is it ethically grown? You know, is it grass fed? How, you know, where does it come from? Who is making, you know, who's taking care of the animals? How are they treated? That's an important conversation for people to have. And that's very influential.
So I was a couple of years ago traveling, you know, I was in the Peace Corps in Paraguay and I went down to visit my family, and we were driving from Paraguay to Brazil. And just passing farm after farm of genetically modified soybeans and corn, mostly soybeans and corn. I mean, they have the signs up, you know, advertising the types of beans or soybeans and corn. And so you can see that it's GMO essentially. So as you're shifting, you know, these meatless Mondays and perhaps you're switching away from a meat diet, but these burgers and things are generally made from soy, corn, and much of that is GMO. So I guess how is that better? You know, a lot of these farms, if they're not being converted into grasslands or land for cattle, then at least in South America, I can speak to that, the land is being converted into GMO soybean and GMO corn. And, you know, it's you know, I don't eat, you know, these, I used to eat Boca burgers and all kinds of, you know, veggie burgers when I was a vegetarian. I really haven't looked at the ingredients of some of these things like, you know, Beyond Burger and whatnot. But I don't know if they're organic. I don't know if they're just using, you know, genetically modified corn and soy, which has a whole nother, you know, negative impact. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. And I think just kind of stepping back, the most important takeaway is that this is all about progress, not perfection. We do have to have those systemic solutions. We have to have policies. We have to have markets shift. And that only happens when we are trying to get educated and we demand it. But what you just outlined isn't better. That's true, Amy. I mean, especially when you're thinking about USD organic beef, when you're thinking about grass-fed and how it's made. But what happens is people, and of course, I think your big takeaway from the books that I've read of yours is eat whole foods, you know, really focus on whole foods and the ultra processed foods, no matter where, you know, what they say they are, generally are not better options for you. So you want to avoid that. There are some good, decent non-GMO, you know, veggie alternatives that are organic that don't have as much, you know, crap, for lack of a better word, as a processed food. But I think kind of stepping back, the intentionality matters, right? Even if the carbon footprint is different of X choice versus Y choice, as an individual, you're going to do your best and make the most sense for you. But that intention of trying to make the best choice for your health and for the environment is important, because that's where I talk about that culture shift, and that's what we need. But you're absolutely right, because once you start researching and you start getting connected, you know, you see all the different connections and how challenging this can be. A lot of people become paralyzed and are just like, what does it matter? I don't matter. Well, your intention does matter in this instance.
So let's get back. I do have a copy of your first book, you know, One Green Thing, and then your latest book, 60 Days to a Greener Life. Can you speak about those books and what can we do each day to make a difference, not only for ourselves, our family, but for the environment and global health, frankly?
Well, thank you, Amy. The first book, One Green Thing, was written after a dinner table conversation I had with my teenage kids, who basically were telling me how alone they felt in climate action, even though, as you know, and as you outlined when you introduced me, this is my life's work. You know? And my husband does grizzly bear conservation here in Montana. So I thought, oh my gosh, if my kids feel alone in climate, like what is happening around other dinner tables? And so that inspired me to really dive into this research of mental health impacts of the climate crisis. Both of these books are self-help books. The first one is kind of a workbook. It's a personal guide about what are your interests, what are your strengths, what are your talents, what are your talents in service, how do you show up for the people you love, and how can you get involved by doing one thing each day? You know, whether it's calling your member of Congress, organizing at the local school board, or simply making a better choice when you're buying groceries, or even thinking about the people who grow your food and learn more about, you know, where your food comes from. These are all important steps to just become a better citizen and to ease your anxiety. The second book, 60 Days to a Greener Life, is a great companion to One Green Thing. It's 144 pages. Each chapter starts with a day, day one to day 60. So it's a really simple read. It has a prompt to ask you questions about, do you have a favorite place, outdoor place, when you were growing up, when you were little? What do you think that experience is going to be like 20 or 30 years from now? You know, how can you protect that experience? You know, it asks you to reflect on, you know, what is your favorite One Green Thing? It asks you to, you know, learn more about sustainable fashion, learn more about reducing food waste, and all kinds of steps you can take to be a better citizen and also ease that anxiety you might have about the future.
So I just got anxiety when you talked about sustainable fashion, right? I mean, it can get overwhelming. And I'm a person of, you know, of action. I actually, you know, whatever that was, 35, almost 35 years ago, started a recycling program at the University of South Carolina. You know, I worked in the president's office as an intern, And I saw all of the white paper being wasted and thrown away. And I literally got recycling bins, and I would borrow one of the cars from work and I would drive it down to the recycling place. And then eventually the entire university, you know, extended this out, and I got the president to use recycled paper. But, you know, so I'm a person of action, and I'm a person that doesn't get overwhelmed much. But now when I'm starting to have to think about the clothes I wear and where they came from, it does, you know, get overwhelming. You know, we compost, we recycle, they don't do glass here, but we take the glass somewhere else. That's how, you know, committed I am. I will cannot throw out a glass bottle. I garden here at my house. And hearing that I now need to think about, you know, my clothes, my guess is we could get into our furniture. There's all kinds of things, and it does get overwhelming. So how do we deal with that?
That's where I come back to this idea of trying to do one thing each day. When you're some, like Amy, the story you told is how one person makes an impact. I mean, that's huge. At the University of South Carolina, to get paper recycled, I mean, that is huge, and that is important. So you do make a difference. But again, it's not about perfection. None of us can lead that perfect life. Not even Dr. Amy Myers can lead a perfect, sustainable life. But you do a phenomenal job. And by talking about it, by making it real, when people know how busy you are, how many speaking engagements you have, how many clients you're seeing, all that you're managing from your personal care line to your supplements to your books. I mean, it's just so much that you're doing, and you make your own cleaners. I mean, that is showing people that it's possible, and that's really important. And I think one of the things we forget about is the importance of having the conversation, talking about it. Right? Of like thrifting or making it cool to wear the same outfit. Like, thank you, Jane Fonda, for wearing the same thing five times to different award shows. I mean, to think that something that simple can change how people think,
yes.
But it's true. It did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a little absurd, right? That a celebrity can't wear the same clothes. My daughter's, you know, if she could wear the same outfit to school every day, she would. So, but thrifting, I'm personally not able to do just because of the mold aspect. Sure. So I try to buy, you know, our house is actually LEED certified gold,
right?
With all of, you know, everything that we've done at the house. And I do buy, you know, products. So let's talk about that indoor air quality and our home products. I mean, we were talking about the things that we put on our body. Obviously, we've talked about food and we've talked about cleaning products, but let's talk about the statistic is that the indoor air quality can often be, you know, 5 to 10, even 100 times more toxic than our outdoor air quality. And so furniture, I mean, that's another huge source of a pollutant in your home. Can we talk about indoor air quality in our home?
And absolutely. And you're an expert from personal experience, not just an expert because you read all the data, but from your personal experience too. So I know you have a lot to share on that, Amy. Before we go there, just quickly on sustainable fashion, it doesn't always have to be thrifting. It can be less is more. You know, it can just be investing in high quality things that you wear for a long time, which I know you do, you know? So I think that's important. And when you're thinking about furniture too, thinking about where it's made, how it's treated, you know, are there flame retardants on the sofa? If there are, that maybe you do want to think about a hand-me-down depending on what you can do, or something secondhand if you can do that as well. As far as indoor air quality, a huge issue. You know, I live in Montana and we have smoke season here. I know HEPA filter is really important. We also have an indoor filter for our house. And I think as we start talking about all of these things you can do to take back your health, I can just see all the dollar signs popping up, you know, as listeners are thinking about it. It can be really costly. And I think that that's why we have to have these big policy solutions. You know, we have to update our laws and regulations. So everyone, it's not how much sustainability you can afford. These are the options that everybody has. But I think that being mindful of, you know, where you purchase your furniture and how it's made is really important. There's some great certifications out there, whether it's where the wood comes from or how it's chemically treated. But Amy, you've got to just, especially with mold, like mold is different than what you buy, right? Like, so talk to us more about that, because I know a lot of people have come to you because of their experiences too with mold.
Yes. Well, that's a whole, I'll probably do a segment, you know, interviewing some of my, you know, colleagues and friends on that topic and perhaps do one on my own.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I'm looking for furniture, I often look for the Green Guard seal. I think you're probably familiar with that. And so, you know, West Elm and that chain has done an excellent, I think, excellent job, because it is very often that I buy a piece of furniture or and then you open it and the smell, the formaldehydes, I look for formaldehyde free. We have tile in our home. I do happen to have a wool carpeting below me just for the sound for the podcast, but in general don't have carpets. You know, obviously, if you can tolerate recycled or thrifting and going to get used furniture, back in the day when I was a child, everything was real wood. Now to get real wood and formaldehyde-free real wood furniture is, frankly, cost prohibitive for most people.
It is, Amy. My furniture comes from my grandparents. They ordered it from the Sears catalog in 1945. So all of my living room furniture and my kitchen table comes from them, to your point about what's made with real wood. But the Sustainable Furniture, Sustainable Furnishing Council also has a great resource too, but West Elm is a good provider for sure. And there's all kinds of wonderful certifiers out there. Made Safe also looks at mattresses. You know, there's all kinds of off-gassing chemicals for mattresses. Avocado mattresses or organic mattresses. But again, it's a huge investment for people. So one of the things I recommend, especially for people who are buying, you know, crib mattresses is to, if they can't afford an organic crib mattress, is to let it air outside for a couple of days to try to off gas as many chemicals as possible. But it's a challenge. And that's why we have to have these big changes. And we also have to have these conversations so people know what needs to change.
You know, along with the mattress, we were able to get, I've forgotten the brand now because it's been a number of years with Elle. It was not only organic, but it was made with coconut. But it can be cost prohibitive for people with mattresses. And so I've spoken with people who manufacture and make these organic mattresses. And of course, we do have that. But in a guest room and things like that, I also have airtight mattress covers for mold and dust mites. And so my understanding through them is that when you do really put on one of these comprehensive mattress covers, it really does prevent against these flame retardants. And then you can always get a wool topper on top so that you're not, you know, in contact with that.
Exactly.
So if you had to pick, you know, kind of three areas in your home, what do you think would have the greatest impact for somebody, you know, that's on a budget? Where would you spend your dollars?
It's a great idea. The first thing is a water filter. You know, any, you know, a home, you know, reverse osmosis would be preferable, but that's costly. So at least a Brita filter, like filter your water, is the first thing. The second is that I would get, and this is mostly because where I live, I would get an air filter that you can take, even if it's portable and you move from room to room, an air filter would be really important. And the third is I would avoid carpeting if you can, because of the, you know, forever chemicals that are in carpeting, flame retardants and all of that, and do hardwood floors if you can. But I'm sure you have a gazillion.
No, I was just going to comment on yours, yeah. Right? So, I mean, I write in my books about, you know, preventing the toxins from coming in and then getting them out, and a whole water filter. I mean, really, you hit it on the head, a whole water filter. And if you cannot get a whole home water filter, you can, not only do I recommend, you know, the water that you're drinking, but getting adapters that you can put on your shower. Mm-hmm. And I have a whole home filter from Aquasana, and they make in our house in Austin, we didn't have the ability to do that. So it's just a not very expensive filter that you can screw onto the shower head, because as you know, what can happen is as you're taking this hot shower, things vaporize even more, and then your pores are open and you can be absorbing even more during something as innocent as a hot shower. And then, of course, yes, as you're drinking your water, filtered water, and then HEPA filters throughout the house if you're able. And what was the last one that you said?
I just
there?
Said hardwood floors if you can.
Hardwood floors, yeah. We have, yeah, because with a carpet, unless you're getting, you know, a wool rug, 100% wool that isn't treated with flame retardants, isn't, you know, dyed, which is, I can't show you my rug below, but that's what I have below, is, you know, most people are walking in their bare feet. And so then you're on this carpet in your bare feet in your home. And so, you know, you can be absorbing all of those chemicals, not only through your respiration, or but also by touch through your feet. So we actually have, we have tile throughout our house here. And that is because getting hardwood floors these days that don't have formaldehydes in it is very expensive. And then for me, should I have a leak, of which I had quite a number in this house, you know, having the tile floors really helped me with that.
Sometimes having a conversation like this, like you said, can be overwhelming. Like, oh my gosh, I never thought about my floors. Do they have formaldehyde in them? What about the overhead shower? But I want to kind of flip the paradigm a little bit. When I have these conversations, I get excited. And the reason I get excited is because there's so many options now. When we were growing up, there were not. Like, many of us ate, you know, lean cuisines or Stouffer's, you know, French pizza. That was like the fancy meal as Gen Xers when we would get our Stouffer's French bread pizza and watch in front of the TV on a plastic TV tray. So like I'm just envisioning this future. And one of the things I talk about in both books is this idea of us thinking about our personal legacy, of us thinking about people who've created incredible opportunities for us. And I know you write a lot about your mom and, you know, what an amazing person that she was and how much of your journey of becoming a doctor was about her experience. And then think about how we're going to pay it forward. But the fact that there's new companies that are manufacturing, you know, organic mattresses, are trying to, even when the government isn't acting, trying to provide opportunities for us to have access to water filters, to have access to air filters, to think about clean energy. There's so much progress that we have made and we can make, and we can create something beautiful. We can, as a society. It's just going to take all of us. You know, when we think about our kids and, you know, they're worried about what they're inheriting from us, but we could make something beautiful if we had green design, like if people had access to LEED certification buildings for everything. It could be really, really beautiful. And so I think one of the things I want to do is, as we have these conversations, is for people to realize, oh my gosh, look, someone has seen this issue and is trying to solve it. Right now, it's not at a price point where everyone can buy it, but it's going to get there and we can get there.
And I think I'm a little bit older than you. And so I think I was born, well, in 1969, so early 70s as I'm growing up. And, you know, back then, I don't even know that there was formaldehyde in the wood, right? I don't know. But, you know, so I grew up on
there was lead and gasoline.
Yes, there was. But, you know, I grew up on the edge. You know, I grew up you know, really
you knew
on
what
the
carob,
edge.
You knew what caribs were.
You know, and then I saw it shift. And luckily I did grow up with a mother, well, parents, mostly my mother, who was very into the environment and into the microbiome. And, you know, I had that experience of real whole food. We didn't have a lot of money, so we did go to the thrift store and get real wood bookshelves. I remember going to, you know, pick out the bookshelf, or we went to the store and got the real wood furniture, and then we painted it ourselves because, you know, that's what we could do. And so, you know, I don't remember my house smelling of formaldehyde from furniture or hardwood. We had hardwood floors growing up, you know. And so then I think there was this shift. You know, it was a special treat to have a TV dinner when my parents went out, but I didn't like TV dinners. And so they would have to make me a real meal because I wouldn't eat the Salisbury steak and whatever that my brother loved. So, you know, I kind of had this, right. I think, you know, I must have grown up on real whole foods, and then this stuff tasted disgusting to me. But I did eventually get into the, you know, lean cuisines in the 80s and things like that. So, yes, I did have that. But, you know, just sort of backing up, we talked about how this can be so expensive for people and so overwhelming. And so where does somebody start? You know, both if they're feeling overwhelmed and then if they're on a budget.
Yeah, I think it start with one thing, right? Like, for example, I am going to start meal planning, right? That's going to be the one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to meal plan to take back my health, to be focused on what I'm eating, but also to reduce my food waste. I'm going to make sure that whatever I make on Monday, I'm going to throw into a stir fry on Tuesday, or a soup or a frittata or whatever. You know, I'm going to be really intentional about what I buy. Just doing that one thing is start where you are. And one of the things I do when it comes to this larger issue of climate action or environmental action is I encourage people to take my assessment, which is on onegreenthing.org, to find out about, you know, what are you good at? How do you show up for the people you love? And then from there, you don't have to be all things to all people. Like one of my friends said I was the nicest environmentalist she met because she was afraid environmentalists were just going to take everything away from her. And I'm like, no, we want to add too. We want to create a beautiful world that's healthier and greener and more just for everybody. It's an adding to, it's not a taking away. But the point was, when she found out she didn't have to protest to be an environmentalist, she realized, oh my gosh, I could actually be an environmentalist. I do so many of these things already. I am mindful about my food and where it comes from and who grows it and how it's grown. Oh, I do really don't purchase, you know, a lot of clothes at fast fashion stores. Oh, okay. And so she started to see herself in the movement. So I think start with one thing that you're good at, one thing you already have an affinity for. And we have a great assessment on onegreenthing.org. But also I think my book is a great way just to break it down, especially 60 days to a greener life, because it's just 15 minutes each day. It's a day reader. It's kind of like a devotional, a journal where you can do one thing each day, but it doesn't have to be everything. And it doesn't have to be everything everywhere all at once, even though that was a phenomenal film. So that's not how you have to approach it. These small actions do make a difference. And that's kind of what you encourage people to. It's hard to do all or nothing right off the bat.
It is. And so, you know, one of the things that I often recommend is, and I honestly feel like I got this information from you from an interview years back, when you're looking at cleaning products or makeup and body products, is as you run out of something, you know, your next choice is then something that's greener, more environmentally friendly, less toxic, things like that, instead of feeling like you have to walk into the pantry or the laundry room or your, you know, bathroom and throw everything out all at once. Not only is that wasteful, but it's expensive and it can be overwhelming for people. So just taking it, you know, as you run out of something, replace it with something that is more sustainable for the environment and something that's healthier for yourself. Something that you mentioned, fashion, what was the terminology that you used?
Fast fashion. You know, these
fast fashion,
yeah, like Zahara, or gosh, it used to be called Forever 21 when we were growing up. Okay. I think that's still around, but just this idea.
Yeah, I think it is.
You know, you're buying something on a weekly basis, or instead of like four seasons a year, there's now multiple seasons, sometimes up to 50 seasons that companies are selling new lines of clothing.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard that terminology.
Yeah, fast fashion. Yeah. And so just being mindful, less is more.
Rather investing in a more quality piece that's going to last you, you know, a lot longer than going to get the next greatest thing. Well,
exactly.
You know, I'm like, you're in Bozeman, I'm in Santa Fe. I'm pretty much in yoga pants. And the only time I'm putting on makeup and in a shirt is when I'm doing these interviews. So definitely not happening with me. But I do have almost 7-year-old going on 17. So I cannot speak to, she's already a little fashionista, so we'll have to worry about that one later.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners, you know, how they can find you and where they can take, you've already mentioned where they can take the assessment, but could you mention that again? And we'll also put it all in the show notes.
Yes. Thank you, Amy. So onegreenthing.org is where you can learn more about my nonprofit. Heatherwhite.com is my website, and you can follow me on Instagram at heatherwhiteofficial and at onegreenthing. And the assessment's
wonderful.
On the website. Thank you so much, Amy.
Yeah, we might have already covered this, but for the sake of, you know, doing this again, I like to end the show with three things that people can do today to take back their health.
So three things you can do to take back your health. First is menu plan. I know that is like the least sexy thing you're probably going to hear on this podcast, but menu plan is the first thing you can do. The second is to reduce your food waste, because that is an important part of making a difference in the climate. It's one of the top things that you can do. And the third thing is a daily practice of sustainability. It can bring more joy into your life. Do one thing each day for the environment and your health and make it a practice.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I actually on my list right after this is my menu planning for the week.
Oh, that's great. Oh, good. I'm so glad. I keep seeing that. People are like, wow, that is boring.
No, I literally, L was out yesterday. I have two new cookbooks. I was scouring the cookbooks, putting the things, and it is literally on the list for Monday today to come up with our menu planning this week. So I appreciate the reminder, and it was so wonderful to see you, and I hope to see you again in person soon, and congratulations on the new book.
I want to thank this week's guests for sharing their time and knowledge, and thank you for listening. To read the full show notes for each episode, which include a summary, timestamp, quotes, and any resources mentioned, please visit amymyersmd.com/podcast. Lastly, if you've enjoyed this episode, I'd love if you would leave a rating and a review on Apple or Spotify, and we'll select a few to read out loud in a future episode. Tune in next week to hear from another inspiring guest as we help you take back your health.